Today is August 12th. I'm having a conversation with Keith and Nancy Green. And we're picking up in the fall of 1982. And so, back to where we were. Nancy had gone back to Sierra Vista. She was going to teach down there in the fall of 82. And I think that you were at the North Rim as a dishwasher, and then you were. But I don't know, I'm not sure in the fall of 82 if you were still on the North Rim or if you had gone back to Phantom.
In the fall, I went back to Phantom. Went back to Phantom Ranch. I got a phone call. Debbie Marr was the manager then, and she said, well, I can't hire you as a maintenance person because I already hired this guy named Paul Beal as a maintenance guy, but I can still hire you as a utility worker, which is the name of all the jobs there. That's
how is utility different than maintenance?
Oh, well, a utility worker, like one day might be a waiter, and the next day might be a cook, and the next day might be a cabin cleaner, and the next day might be a laundry person. See, their jobs changed all the time, which was a good thing because it meant that everybody did every job, and so you got to check up on the guy who did it before you did, or woman who did it before you did, and you can tell if they did a good job or not. And if they didn't do a good job, then you could confront them and say, hey, you forgot to do this, and you didn't do that, etc.
So yeah, that would be interesting because you learn all these different jobs, right?
Yeah, and it kind of made it so everybody did their best at every job, which was really good because it made the ranch, you know, I think it was much cleaner and much more well kept up, and also the waiters remembered to do all the things they had to do, and etc. There's also was the dishwasher job that was called the lodge person because it was not just washing dishes but also cleaning and mopping the floors and other things anyway that were doing the trash, dealing with the trash, of course, which had to all be taken out by mule
and
compacted before you did that.
So how do you compact it?
There was it was at first we had this the only thing we compacted really was the beer cans, which there were a lot of. Like we would probably have 50 or so beer cans that we had to compact, you know, in order, you know, because they don't weigh anything, but they take up a lot of room. So what we would, you know, what the lodge person had was, it was a number 10 can. That, you know, so that would be about maybe 6 or so inches in diameter.
Mm-hmm.
And it was filled with cement.
Whoa.
And then there was a pole, a metal pole, wrought iron pole sticking out of it. And what you did is you took every beer can, and you had to set it up, and if you're good at it, you could set it up in bunches of three,
mm-hmm.
three cans that needed to be crushed at a time.
Okay.
And then you kind of stood over it, and you picked it up like this.
Oh, wow. Over with your arms up.
With your arms in front of you, you picked it up and crashed it down on your beer cans. And if you were good at it, you could do three at a time. If you weren't so good, like me, I could only do two at a time because I'd always miss the third one.
Well, you could definitely build up some muscles that way.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you're definitely. Only doing two at a time, you have to keep lifting that thing up.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Well, that's interesting. So it was like early forms of compacting. And I wonder now, do you think they have trash compactors now?
Oh, yeah. Well, now they... yeah, they have a trash compactor down there, and
that takes,
they just dump it all in that and push the button.
Did they do any kind of recycling back in the day, in the early 80s, or was that not even a thought then?
Let me think. Yeah, we were recycling it as much as we could. We had a... two barrels in the storeroom, or what do they call that room? I forget. Anyway, the room kind of between the kitchen and the employee dining room there, that room, I forget what we called it, but anyway, it had a recycle, as long as I was there, which was, you know, there was always a recycle trash can and a regular trash can that wasn't recycled, and that was also part of the lodge person's duties, was to compact those when you could. Now, when I first started working down there, they had, God, how did we do that?
Because this would have been like 10 years earlier, right?
This would have been in like 1975.
Okay, a little bit less than 10. Mm-hmm.
We had, I can't remember how we did that. But somehow we kept the paper... the paper goods separate from the cans and things, and then that was also part of the lodge's duty, was he had to go out, and it was a big like a big trash can outside.
Okay.
It was back where, well, I think at this. At this time, it's part of a heliport, but at the time, it was just, you know, kind of overlooking the creek. And what we would do is dump all the burnables into this can, and then it had, you put a lid on it, and the lid was connected to hose, like a vacuum cleaner hose sort of hose, and then that was connected to a blower. And so what we would do, the some lodge people were really good at this and some weren't, and what you had to do is pour all the burnables in this trash can and then cover it up with this lid. The lid had a hole in it about maybe 4 inches in diameter in the top, the very top. And then the hose came in from the side.
Okay.
And anyway, you had to first light the burnables, light them on fire and get them going good, and just when they were going the best they could, you threw the lid on it.
Okay.
And then you had to plug in the
vacuum
the pumps that,
okay,
the air pumps that blew air through the hose, and that air was supposed to make it so that your burnables burned smokelessly.
Huh.
But it didn't always work. You know, sometimes you'd throw the top on and before you get it plugged in, it'd start smoking, and you'd plug it in and all this smoke is pouring out.
Oh my
and before
gosh.
You know it, you look around and the whole inner gorge has a layer of smoke
oh,
in
Lord,
it.
Oh, Lord, it's a wonder you never set the forest on fire.
Well, there's no forest down there.
But, oh, that's true. It's like shrubby stuff, right?
You're right, and cactus and stuff. But, yeah, you're not levels that on fire. But it was, you know, the campground is down there. They didn't really appreciate it. The rangers to have have smoke all over the place.
How many times a week would you do this? Just once?
We do it every morning right after right after breakfast. So, you know, most people were already gone by then. You know, they were already hiking out. But there were still people down there. In particular, the rangers. And this one ranger, Jenny Burns was her name, she had been an employee at Phantom Ranch in 75, but by 78 or something around there, she had become a ranger,
okay,
and even a ranger down there, and she took on the project of getting that burnable incinerator taken out so that we couldn't do it anymore. So after that, we had to pack everything out, even the burnable stuff.
And so do you remember when that came out? Was it, okay, so we're right now around 82. She's a ranger in 82. That's about 82, 83, 84, when they finally got rid of that?
No, this is more like 78, 70.
Okay. So she was a ranger by 78 then. But she had started out as an employee.
I could be wrong on that one.
Okay.
I know I remember that's what happened to it.
She got rid of it.
She got rid of it, yeah.
Okay. So up until she decided this is too dirty, messy, smoky, you know, somewhere between 78 and, you know, or mid-70s and 82, you guys were mm-hmm. doing this burning, and then, you know, thanks to her, it went to just packing everything out on mules.
Right.
Okay. That must have been quite a lot of work. Were you involved with that?
Well, it's paper stuff. It's just one mule's worth, probably.
Yeah.
It was just more work for the packers.
Yeah.
And less work for us, I guess, but
so this then
it was mainly an environmental thing,
right? Because that really is not good for the canyon to have all that smoke in there, right?
No.
So do you remember who your roommate in 82 was?
Let's see.
So this would be that fall that Nancy's back in Sierra Vista teaching. And you're in Phantom.
Yeah, well, she was teaching every fall from 75 to 76 to 77.
Right.
Every fall.
And I think she was Sierra Vista.
Oh, wait, she has something to say.
Oh, okay, Nancy. You I think, had told me last time you switched over to Sierra Vista, I think, around 81. Does that sound about right? 81, you moved from Apache Junction teaching to Sierra Vista. I think she might be sleeping again.
No, she's
cogitating.
Can't talk.
Oh, so
well.
She's thinking about it. Yeah, she's not moving her mouth at all.
And you know, if you want this.
Yeah, she's
this can help.
Kind of sleeping, I think, though.
See what she ever wants to see. And then you can write what she felt that she wants.
Okay. We'll come back to that. But you, in the fall of 82, do you remember who your roommate was?
In 82, let me think. Well, let's see, when I came back down there, I believe that was when I was in, Cabin 11, so that means my, what do you think, maybe not, two, God, this is too hard, 82,
it was a long time ago.
I might have been, I think by that time I was called the assistant manager's cabin. It had been the assistant manager's cabin, but who was the assistant manager? The assistant manager.
Did you have to have a roommate if you were in the assistant manager cabin?
Yeah, it had a downstairs bed and an upstairs bed in it. And that might have been when Steve Young was my roommate.
Okay.
Because Steve Young, like one time, I don't know if we told this story yet or not, but
I don't think so.
When it was, you know, 82 would be when I had met Nancy, so if it was that year, then she'd come down to see me after that phone call that we've talked about.
Yes, I was going to ask if she could come down and visit.
And she was, and anyway, my roommate, Steve, came into, was working anyway, but came into his room, into the assistant manager's cabin, and Nancy was sitting on the bed sorting my socks out because I had given up on sorting my socks so that they matched.
Yes.
I just figured, your feet don't match, so why should your socks?
Who's gonna see them anyway?
Yeah, so I had just completely stopped, and by this time too, my method. Well, when you're cleaning the cabins and whatever, you're always finding socks laying around, and even shirts and pants and all sorts of stuff.
Right.
And we always called them maid spoils. And I just started collecting them. And that
didn't matter if they matched or not.
No, and that was my wardrobe, is all the shirts I'd found and all the shorts and, all the pants. Anyway, anything that was my wardrobe. So I had quite a bit of stuff. And because I had so much stuff, I didn't have to do laundry very often.
There you go.
Because, and so when I did laundry, I used the industrial washing machine that we had down there.
Okay.
It was one of those with the barrel pointing forward.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
And it was huge. You could put, I can't remember how many sheets, but you could put a lot of stuff in there at once. Maybe there's 10 sheets. I'm thinking.
You basically call them like commercials.
But anyway.
Commercial ones.
Yeah, so I just loaded up with my whole load, socks and shirts and everything, and wash it. And I guess I had done that before Nancy showed up. And so it was all sitting in a big bag. And so Nancy started, was waiting for me to get off. You know, I had was working that morning, and she's waiting for me to get off. So she saw this bag of socks that did nothing match anything. And so she sat on the bed and started matching socks. And Steve-O came in and said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "I'm making all these socks match." And he just started laughing, a big old belly laugh. But
he was used to you having different colored socks on. Did he end up staying very long as an employee?
Yeah, he did. He did, several years anyway.
Had he already been down there for quite a while to have the privilege of being in the fancier cabin or the executive cabin?
No, I don't think so. Let me think. Steve-O, when did he get there and when did he leave?
He did similar things to you, like a little bit of everything?
Yeah, did the same job.
Okay.
Same job.
Can you remember anybody else?
Oh, I gotta tell you the Steve-O story.
Oh yeah, let's hear it.
Okay. The assistant manager's cabin had one of the assistant managers, or actually he was one of the maintenance guys, had lived there for a while, and he built these benches on the north and west side of the assistant manager's cabin, these benches, and kind of making part of a square, and then the rest of the square was this big patch of prickly pear cactus.
Okay.
And we sit around on the benches, drinking beers and talking. You know, that was just one of the things that the staff we'd done that and fixed it all up, you know. So you got the benches, and then in the middle this big old patch of prickly pear, like 10 feet by 10 feet prickly pear cactus.
Wow.
Patch, so, this one time, Nancy came down with a bunch of her school teaching friends from Sierra Vista, and one of them was this woman named Shannon, who was this tall, shapely, beautiful blonde.
Okay.
But she and Steve-O and I and others, you know,
uh-huh.
God, did you guys bring that down or what? But there was a bottle of tequila involved. And so we were drinking the tequila, I think at first drinking shots and then just passing the bottle. So you can imagine how wild this party started getting.
Especially with tequila. That'll really put you over the edge.
Yeah, definitely. But anyway, we finished the bottle. And,
oh my God.
We had kind of a tradition down there, is when you finish a bottle of tequila, is you light it on fire, because if you hold a match over a bottle, an empty bottle of tequila, I mean, one that's just recently empty anyway, if you hold a match over it, it makes this really cool flame, and it, you know, flame, it's like a blue flame, and it mm-hmm. goes down and then pops.
Cool.
And but not always. Sometimes it just goes whoosh, you know.
Right.
And so anyway, we go, oh, we've got to light this bottle. And so I don't know if it was Steve-O or me or somebody, you know, we tried to light a match and hold it over the bottle, which by that time was a little hard to do. And Shannon said, oh, you know, I can do that. And so she grabs the matches and strikes a match. And I think we had the tequila bottle. It was right, it was on the bench just outside the window of the of our cabin. So behind her is a little break of about maybe 3 feet, and then that big old pile, the big old thing of cactuses, a prickly pear. Well, anyway, she holds this, the match, she gets the match, and she holds it over the bottle, and the bottle went whiff, you know, like a big flame, and she was just kind of, you know, hanging over it, trying to light it, and when it went off,
sorry, keep going.
And when it went off, she went back like this,
ooh.
And she fell backwards, ooh, into all of that, ooh, cactus.
Oh my gosh.
And then, you know, they were like, all the cactuses are going back and forth like this with,
oh, no,
with her down in it, you know.
Oh my God, the pain.
And so Steve-O, being the brave and gallant lad that he was, he grabbed her hand and pulled her out of the cactus, but the cactus, I mean, it was all over.
Oh, man.
Spines were all over.
Oh.
And so he started pulling them off and then pulling them out, and then, you know, he was pulling out places and more... private places, I suppose.
Well, yeah, I would think so, because she fell back into it.
Yeah, until, you know, and finally, you know, they disappeared into the cabin, and we never saw them until the next morning.
That's a good story for sure.
And that next morning, Steve-O didn't come to work in time, you know. I think he was the... I don't know, he was some job that didn't start until late, so he could come in a little late anyway. So he comes in, and he's you know, before he had something going on with his foot, which made him limp, and,
oh,
you
man.
Know, or his back, it was his back that made him kind of limp and stuff. But he walks in, and he's like, flat, you know.
He's feeling pretty,
you know,
good.
And we went, Steve-O, how's your back? And he just stops and goes, turns around and goes, oh, I forgot.
I had forgot I had that problem.
I forgot I had that problem.
Oh, that's a good story. You know if they continued to see each other, or was that a once and done thing?
I don't think so. I don't think they ever.
They just happened to come down.
Again. Yeah.
Came down with Nancy that one time.
Yeah.
So, okay, so that's the fall of 82, and anything you can remember from that fall when you're down there and she's up on top that of interest, maybe, in terms of employees?
Okay, well, she was only on top in the summertime of 82.
In the summer of 82,
yeah,
she was in Sierra Vista, I believe. No, I mean, she was in Sierra Vista in the fall, but in the summer of 82, she was still at the North Rim.
Right.
Right, so she goes back to work.
I was at the North Rim then, too. So.
Right. Then
so,
you
yeah,
went back.
She went back to...
Yeah.
She went back to Sierra Vista, and I was able to get on again at Phantom Ranch with Debbie. As, not as maintenance, but just as a...
utility guy.
A utility guy. It was that fall that Nancy called me from... Where were you? Well, you were someplace in Central Arizona, right?
She's sleeping.
Oh, she is?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Okay, well, she was... I think she was at the university, so in Tucson.
Okay.
I think that's where she was. And then she had become a dorm counselor, a dorm mother, you know, sort of, for the poor girls dorm at, which one was that? Yuma Hall?
But this is...
Anyway.
Had she gone back to school then in the fall of 82?
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Because in the fall of 82, as far as I know, she was teaching in Sierra Vista.
She was teaching, okay. She was teaching, but she was, I guess she wasn't the dorm counselor. She was, but somehow, you know, I guess she'd gone to visit. She had some friends from her years, I guess, at U of A, but, I mean, she wasn't going to school at U of A at the time. And anyway, they had a party one night, and she got good and loaded, and she called Phantom Ranch and to talk to me, and somebody had told, she was all feeling all sad, somebody had told her that, you know, that Keith Green, he really liked you. And she went, oh, really? And started thinking about me, and she goes, well, I'm going to call him. So she called me from
Tucson.
From Tucson. And we talked for a long time, and she was saying that if she ever got a hold of me, she would do some really fun things with me. So
she's laughing about that. I think she's remembering it.
So I tried to, how do I put this nicely? But anyway, so
sorry.
I'm going, well, wow, you know.
Who is this lady? And I think I'm going to invite her down.
Oh, I knew
this
who she
fall.
Was, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, you had known her from up on
yeah,
the north.
Yeah, because we'd had lots of conversations, you know, in the, like, you know, remember her boyfriend was the bartender.
Right, right. He saved your life when the guy was trying to rip your glasses
off. Yeah, exactly.
Off. That was bad.
Yeah. So, anyway, she...
did you start to write to each other, or
huh?
Did you start writing to each other then, or did she continue to call? Because I guess it's
yeah,
hard.
We started. We continued to call each other and talk to each other, and then
was it hard to get calls that took more than a little bit down there? Like if you wanted to chat for a while,
if she called at night, it was okay.
Okay,
it was. You know, there was just one line through the canyon, just one. It was a. You know, a party line extraordinaire because, you know, all the ranger stations and Indian Gardens and Phantom Ranch and on up, you know, Cottonwood and, you know, they were all on one line, this one phone line, which was strung... it was strung on these phone lines that were just that had been installed, I think, by the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Oh, wow.
And they were only maybe 10 feet above the trail.
Mm-hmm.
In places, some places they left, they were kind of away from the trail. But the problem was that if there was a rock slide in the canyon, it could often wipe out the phone line.
Okay.
You know, because the phone line was just hanging on these 10-foot poles all the way across the canyon. There was a, I don't remember his name, was Bill, he was the phone man, and he kind of liked it when the phone went out in the canyon, because he had to borrow a mule to ride and a mule to at least one mule, maybe two mules, with everything from phone line to who knows what packed on it.
Wow.
On the pack saddles. And he'd have to ride the entire line. And there were some places like there were some places like for example where the what's that called, where let's see, can you not do that while we're talking? Thanks. Just because I can't think, which doesn't take much, but...
But is it, if there's places, like, is it where it's attached, or...?
There's places like, what was that called? Was it the chimney? It was, Devil's Corkscrew.
Okay.
Like the Devil's Corkscrew on the Bright Angel Trail.
Okay.
Where it went, it left the trail. It went, you know, it was like kind of hanging, it'd go over cliffs and stuff like that.
Wow. How could that man service that?
I know.
That's crazy.
I know. He had to, you know, it was pretty amazing the kinds of things he had to do, but he'd do that, you know. But anyway, his job was to ride down and find the places where the
would get messed up,
where it had been destroyed, and fix them. So
kind of really, a cool job if you're a daredevil.
Oh yeah, because normally he was like driving a truck,
right?
You know, all that kind of stuff. But no, this he got to ride in the canyon.
Called you to chat with you in the evening. Was there only one person allowed on the phone at a time, or was there...
Yeah.
Oh, really? One at a time?
One at a time. So, you know, you couldn't... you couldn't be on the line if the rangers... If there's something going on, you know, like if there was, like, a missing person or even an injury on the trail or whatever, the rangers needed the line, so they'd say, please get off the line, we have an emergency here. And you had to hang up immediately. But
and then in the winter, fall, winter, we'll just stay in 82, but just generally in the fall and winter, was the staff size a lot less than in the summer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was in the winter. In fact, there were times when there was probably only five or six people working at a time.
Okay.
You know, because, you know, I remember days when there was only one cabin it snowed on the rim, but there was only one cabin with visitors in it.
Okay.
And because the mule ride had been canceled, and so, you know, those of us that were down there were basically free to do whatever we wanted to.
So what would you do, like, on those kind of days, or when you're down to like six people and it's winter, would you, in the evenings, would you guys sit around and, I don't know how many women were down there, some obviously, would you play cards, would you take advantage of the time to go hiking even though it was kind of cold?
Kind of thing. Well, my favorite story about that was in December of 78 when it snowed. Usually when it snowed on the rim, you know, the rim disappears, but it's rain down below. It's rain in the canyon.
Okay.
But this time, it actually snowed down at Phantom Ranch.
Wow.
And of course they canceled the mule ride but still, I think there was one cabin that had a couple that were staying in it. And that was it for the whole ranch. That was all that were down there. And so I believe I was the cook. And but there was only two people. There were two people. That was it. You know,
right.
So that's all I had to cook for is two people.
That's not bad.
And so we decided, the whole crew just about decided, because there was snow at Phantom Ranch, you know, there was like a couple of inches on the roof of all the cabins. It was really beautiful
down there.
And so we all decided to hike up to Ribbon Falls, which is 6 miles up the trail.
Wow.
Up to North Kaibab. And it was beautiful, you know. There was these frozen waterfalls in that river. We went up to Ribbon Falls, and Ribbon Falls had ice on either side of the falls. It was, you know, it was just, everything was just so beautiful.
And this is way before the time when people had those crampons or clamp-ons, whatever it is, on the bottom of your shoes to give you traction, right?
No, we had those.
Oh, did you have them even back then?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So you
They weren't as fancy as they are now, but...
But you could still strap them on.
Yeah, yeah.
And how did you feel walking on that sort of icy, up the north, cold side?
It was easy because, you know, the trail was it was covered with snow, so it wasn't icy, really.
And you could just kind of clomp through it.
You know, as soon as the sun came out, of course, it would start melting everything.
Right.
It never really refroze into ice, so it wasn't really...
That bad.
I mean, if we'd have gone over to Ribbon Falls, it was ice. But anyway, so we went up there and came back. There's one guy that tells a story about a time when I was hiking in and it was snowing. There was a snowstorm and we got down to Panorama Point and Panorama Point is on this South Kaibab Trail.
Okay.
And we were looking, and there's a place there where you can look down at Phantom Ranch, and of course the snow ended just about there at the top of the inner gorge, and all of a sudden we heard the bell, the dinner bell ringing down there.
Huh.
And the guy I was with said, "Oh wow, it's dinner time already." And I said, "Oh my gosh," and I said, "I'm the cook."
Ha ha ha.
The somebody had taken over, but
thank goodness.
Yeah.
That's something. Well, yeah. Then do you remember that first year that you guys were dating? For around the holidays, did she come down for Christmas, or did you go up, or did you not see each other?
Let me think. The first year, I can't remember. Do you, Nancy, or she's
kind
asleep.
Of sleeping.
Huh.
Yeah, she seems pretty out.
Shoot.
Nancy.
I remember.
You remember the winter of 79? Did you spend Christmas with Keith? In the canyon? I think she's out.
I don't think so. I think, you know, what tended to happen is they give everybody time off at Christmas time if they wanted it, because there's nobody coming, you know,
down
anyway. There's no business, so.
Do you remember if you met her parents, like, within 6 months of, you know, actually getting together? Because by Christmas time, it would have been close to 6 months. If you visited her mom and dad in Sierra Vista that year, or who knows?
You know, that might be. They lived in, actually, they still, the first time I met them, they still lived in Phoenix.
Oh, they hadn't done their retirement home yet in
no.
Sierra Vista.
No, well, they were, right. So yeah, that was the first time I met him, was there. And I mean, to be honest about it, I am a hippie. And I mean, I used to always wear, and still do wear as often as possible, tie-dye shirts, and I used to always have all these pairs of bell-bottom pants and you know, I liked people like Jimi Hendrix and
just like my
know.
Husband Steve. From
yeah.
Pizza. Yeah. He always wore a silver turquoise. I mean, his turquoise beads around his neck during those times.
Yeah, I used to wear beads all the time, and even flowers in my hair sometimes.
And her father was like military, right?
Yeah, he was a general in the Air Force. And so you can imagine how well...
How did it go
fitted
over?
...fitted we were for each other. You know, I just had to keep my tongue to myself, you know, when he started talking. Because, well... He was totally fixated on World War II.
Okay.
And so, all you had to do is mention an airplane or maybe not even that. And he would go into these stories about World War II, being a World War II pilot. And Nancy had already heard of all, so... She would kind of make herself scarce when he started in on one of those stories.
But and he loved to talk about it.
He just, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
it just went on and on and on. And I was like biting my tongue, like.
What could you do?
You know, what can I, you know.
Yeah, and they were very, you know, that World War II generation was so patriotic, you know, the ones that went. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So in the spring of 83, she, I guess, is still teaching. And
but let me say, her mother was very sweet. She was a little, very short, and...
She was a librarian too, right?
Yeah, she had been, yeah. Yeah, she was... you know, good cook, and, you know, so, you know, what could I do? Sit there and eat.
Right. That's what you always do when you go to the parents' house. You just sort of
exactly.
sit and kind of have make conversation and eat.
Yeah, and try not to bring up the demonstrations I was in.
Yeah. He never asked you, I'm sure.
No, he didn't. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. Yeah. So do you think that in that spring, she still worked and you were still in Phantom? And
yeah.
I don't, you know, see, I don't know, I mean, I don't know how far into the 80s you start getting into, you know, when you decided to become a ranger and all that. But I mean, I think at this point, this is only the spring of 83.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when she made the move from, you know, to start teaching on the South Rim. And I believe that you were at Phantom while she was, but I don't know, while she was teaching up on the top. But I don't know what year that all transpired.
Wait, let me think now. I believe it was in 1980. Okay. In 2, I was... in 2, I was at the Grand...
I'm at the utility worker.
I think. Right in there, 83, maybe 84. This kind of major event happened in my life, which was that there were... this goes back to the powerhouse.
Okay.
We talked about the powerhouse.
That's where, is this where the Akins lived?
Right.
Okay.
Right. The Akins lived there, and back when Bruce was in college, him and... I can't think of his name right now, but...
It was a friend of Bruce's?
Yeah.
I'll remind you of it the next time we talk.
I'm sure it'll come to my mind sometime, and I keep seeing Mary. Mary keeps helping Nancy, so maybe then I can...
Could ask her.
Couldn't figure, remember, but anyway, Mary came to visit Phantom Ranch, and she brought around his wife.
The friend of Bruce.
Yeah.
Or the somebody of Bruce.
Whose name was... God,
it'll come to you. It'll come to you. And if it comes to you, just call me. You have my number.
Okay.
So she visited...
Sherry, but I know it wasn't Sherry.
She visited Phantom Ranch with wife of some of Bruce's friend.
Bruce's wife. And their friends... These were friends from way back before Bruce even came to the Grand Canyon.
Okay, okay.
I remember we were like standing looking at something at Phantom Ranch, and she reached over and grabbed my hand.
The friend of Mary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which, you know, I was like, whoa! You know, what's going on here? Wow, you know.
Right.
Because, I mean, and she was beautiful.
Wow.
Sherry? No. God damn.
Maybe Sherry.
Why can't I remember it?
It's probably something like Sherry.
I should be able to. Well, I just don't remember because it's such a kind of a sordid story, but anyway, we started talking, and they were going to get a divorce. This woman and this guy.
Okay.
They were going to get a divorce anyway, and so I was like, you know, kind of head over heels over this woman, and then I told Debbie I was going to quit Phantom, which I did.
And Debbie at that, who was Debbie?
The manager of Phantom.
Okay.
And anyway, so I quit and went up to the rim and moved into the trailer with this woman. You know, she was, you know, separated from her husband. They weren't divorced yet, but they were separated, and they I moved in with her in her trailer on the South Rim. She's still in a trailer, and I had arranged. I had some friends who were running a river company, and I'd gone on a couple of river trips with them before,
mm-hmm.
and so I went on a river trip with. I had arranged to take
this woman,
Sherry, with me.
Yes.
And so we did. We went on this river trip, and on the river trip, she was, she was kind of standoffish, and then she stopped. She stopped showing up at night. You know, we'd camp, and we'd set up camp and everything, but she wouldn't. She was someplace else every night.
Huh.
And it turned out she was with one of the
river
boatmen,
people.
One of the river guides.
Mm-hmm.
She was like staying with, you know, making love with them every night.
Wonder who it was, but we won't.
Whoever it was.
Whoever
yeah.
it was.
And so
she broke your heart.
It broke my heart, and it was really hard because to have that sort of thing happen on a river trip when there's no way to get away from it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
really
happening under your nose.
Was
basically.
Really awful. Yeah,
that's,
I couldn't hike out. I couldn't stay there. It was just awful. And so,
did you ever speak to her again?
Oh yeah, we've seen each other since then. I didn't know what her name was. No.
Well, you forgot
her
name, which says something.
Yeah, that says something. That's probably why.
So you met a Nancy after her then.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
We get out, we finish, and take the bus up to Leeds.
Diamond Creek, right?
Diamond Creek, thank you.
Sure.
Up to Diamond Creek, and then she even took a shower with one of the other male passengers.
She was a wild child, it sounds like.
Where's that stop that they make? Where there's showers anyway.
I'm not sure.
I was just like, get me away from this woman.
Yeah.
And so
she was.
I had a friend.
She was polyamorous.
Right. I had a friend in Flagstaff, and I moved in with her because I quit Phantom, you know. So
right.
I moved in with her, and then that wasn't going very well.
Oops, let me just turn off that horrible song. That's the my spam call. My daily spam.
Oh, okay.
I get it every day.
Is that I'm a man?
Spam.
Yeah, but I'm a spam.
Oh, S-P-A-M. I get a spam call.
Yeah, but the...
The music.
The music is
oh,
the
way yeah.
I'm a man starts.
Da, 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 da. Yeah, it goes like that, exactly.
But you could say it's a, I'm a spam. And so
yeah, I'm a spam. So, that's let me easy. See what time it is, just to see. Yeah, we are at 1 hour right now. So I'm going to turn it off right now, if I can figure out how to do that.